You are listening to Fanther Tracks.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
That's not true. That's impossible.
You're listening to Making Tracks. This is episode 131. I'm your co-host, Mark Newbold, and joining me today is a man who, I'm sure, if he knocks on my door, the first thing he would say is, hello there. It's Mark Mulcaster.
Hello there.
Kenobi!
Excited much?
Yeah, pretty excited. I don't know why. I mean, it's only a magazine article.
And a trailer.
And a trailer.
And a range of toys.
Yeah.
And a Ruby's costume. Yeah, it's just the beginning.
Yeah, and more importantly, yes. A Disney Plus streaming series as well.
Yes, coming out on May 25th, I believe.
Apparently so. Exciting times. How are you doing, buddy?
Very excited. I'm very well. I'm rather buzzed about this. I'm looking forward to talking about Kenobi. They've released a lot of information pertaining to this. Obviously, like you mentioned, the Entertainment Weekly magazine and loads of images of hitstarwars.com and the trailer, which is always welcome. I think it was 77 days before May 25th, which kind of makes all the sense in the world, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Am I right in thinking it was also an earnings call day as well? Was that the same day?
Yeah, it was the same day.
I just, again, wonder, you know, we talked about this the other week, didn't we, about how announcements kind of come thick and fast, but you do wonder now if it's worth hanging your hat on, like, when these announcements happen, when they are based around, like, an earnings call, because it seems like a lot of the times there's an earnings call, some kind of trailer gets dropped. So it's not necessarily, yeah. I mean, it's not a bad thing whatsoever, actually, and it kind of helps us a little bit, because it means that maybe, you know, in the next one, there might be something else, there might be an Andor trailer for all we know, you know. So it's amazing. And the fact that we got the first look from Entertainment Weekly, and bless them, was it like we only got the first look for a couple of hours and then literally straight away or trailer comes out. So fantastic.
Yeah, it was nicely done. It was a pleasant surprise. There was a nice buzz about it as it floated around the net. And then, as you say, everyone's going, oh, when's the trailer coming? And then the trailer arrives. It was very well played by all concerned. And obviously StarWars.com have covered it. And then us and every other website worth their salt has dived on it as well. I just want to talk about Kenobi, but it's a regular episode, a studio episode. So we should do what we normally do. Uh-huh. And I'll ask you, because you normally ask me first, I'll ask you, what has come into Casa de Mulcaster this week?
Only one vintage collection figure, I should say. Mm-hmm. And that is the droids Boba Fett figure that from my good friend Nick at Geeky Nerd Toys. I know we talked about the droids, like vintage collection figures coming out, and I got very excited, and I got so excited that I don't actually think I pre-ordered them anywhere, because I had to get C-3PO from Dave Tree at All the Cool Stuff the other day. In fact, I've actually pre-ordered the R2-D2 from him as well, and luckily picked up a Boba Fett, which is fantastic. So wherever I thought I pre-ordered, I didn't, unless of course I have pre-ordered and it's all going to come in one go, which will be a nice and pleasant surprise, which also means I can sell on any doubles I may have. But yeah, so only the one figure, but you know, it was a great figure and it's beautiful and it comes with a little coin and everything. So yeah, how about yourself? What have you got?
Not much, few little odds and sods, nothing much to speak of that have sort of immediately gone upstairs. But the big things this week really is the hardback version of Tempest Runner from Kevin Scott's, obviously his audio books. It's the dramatization, or rather the notations, the scripts of that. And it's a beast. It's about 3 inches deep. So I'm really looking forward to diving into that. We've got a new reviewer on the site called Chris Davis, who's going to be doing comic reviews and book reviews. He's about to review Tempest Runner and the book and such, so that's all good. And my latest wadge of comics from Matt, so I've got the reprint, like the first print, or second print really, of Star Wars issue 20, Crimson Dawn 3, Halcyon Legacy 1, a few other bits and bobs to read. Probably won't get to most of them until I get back from my hollybobs. But yeah, it's all good. It's busy as ever. I didn't insert the audio, but it's busy as ever. Let's talk Kenobi. I just want to talk Kenobi. The trailer. First impressions from when you clicked go and watched the trailer. Not 56k dial up, you're not waiting an hour for it to download like the last time you saw Ewan McGregor for the first time.
Oh my god, that was 4 hours. This, I'll be brutally honest, I was sat on the A1M because there was an accident only about a mile away, but I was sat there, so I just watched it on my phone through the car stereo, and I was just like, Oh my God. And one of the things I thought to myself straight away after it finished, after I kind of finished jumping up and down and my car looked like I must have been like dogging or something, is the fact that doesn't it make a difference that there's a bit of kind of like John Williams classic styles music in the trailer? I was just like, wow,
yeah.
There was something about this, you know, it brought back all the feels of all the music from prequels and just generally for a teaser trailer, I was like, wow, we've actually been given quite a lot. Everybody in there, we roughly know roughly who they are, and the Entertainment Weekly and Stars.com have kind of filled in some blanks about like the Inquisitors and stuff like that. So yeah, it's fantastic. And obviously, you know, only 77 days until, you know, this show's released, so we should probably be getting maybe hopefully a full trailer in a few weeks' time. It'd be fantastic if we do.
It would. And but weirdly, given what we were given, and I'll come back to the music in a minute because you're so on point about that, if I didn't get anything else, if we didn't see anything else until it's probably celebration time, I'd be quite happy with that. I wouldn't mind if we didn't.
I mean, I know they called it a teaser trailer, but I was just like, this is, you know, this is pretty much telling us quite a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ewan looks fantastic. There's nothing in this trailer that makes me kind of go, oh, I'm not too sure about that. It all feels right.
We talked before we started recording about the music for Boba Fett, and great music, really enjoyed the music for that and love the music for Mando, and it's award-winning score and such, and it needed something different. That being said, when you come back to a score, a classic, very Revenge of the Sith heavy piece of music like they used for the trailer, that hits in a totally different way. And I thought the music choice was really fantastic, and made some notes, hearing Duel of the Fates, is that just reminding us of the prequel trilogy? Or do you think that's hinting maybe at Maul being involved because, you know, they're still around at this point?
That's a good point, actually, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, maybe. Yeah, maybe Maul could be in it, actually. I mean, you know, but you heard Duel of Fates, you heard some of Battle of the Heroes, and also I think it ended with, like I said, Anakin's Dark Deed, you know, so it's got that prequel vibe, totally. And I think really, probably more than any other track, Duel of Fates is that iconic track that really encapsulates the prequel trilogy. So it makes sense to use it. But I mean, hell, I'm totally not opposed against seeing Darth Maul. We know he's still kind of kicking around, so to speak, in this era. So there's no reason why not. My only kind of comment to that is, you know, we've got the Grand Inquisitors in there as well. And it would possibly seem like a lot of dark side users or dark side force sensitives to be all in one area, you know, against Obi-Wan, which would kind of give him a real tough, tough battle if he, you know, if he has to kind of face more than one out, you know, at the same time.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, some of the things that we saw, obviously, one of the big takeaways is we've seen, not that we didn't see him as a baby in Revenge of the Sith, of course, being handed over, but we see a young Luke Skywalker, you're guessing he's around about 10 years old, sitting on the top of the homestead, the entrance to the homestead, like he's on a pod racer, like his dad.
Yeah, such a fantastic little shot to put in. You know, you get to see through the micro-macro binoculars.
Yes.
You know, the homestead and that, which is awesome, just seeing all that. And then you just see a, you know, Luke wearing, I mean, I don't think they're the same goggles. I mean, unless of course Smee took them with her when she moved in with Cleek and left them there. I mean, but you know, the fact that he's got them there and he looks like he's on a, you know, pretending to be on a speeder or a pod racer. So it's I think it's fantastic, you know, just the fact that we get to see him. Be interested to see, and you know, how much you get to see of Luke, if you get to see much of him close up or if it's literally going to be from a distance.
Yeah, I think they did that in the comics, the Marvel run, the first Marvel run in 2015, some of the Obi-Wan issues, you saw Luke from a distance, didn't you?
Yeah.
You know, and he did, there was more interaction in that as it went on, but I think from a distance just feels tonally like what we would expect. But I think also, and few people have said it, you know, and there's a couple of criticisms about this trailer because we're Star Wars fans, and there's always criticisms because that's just the way of the world, that the expectation for Kenobi's, the distance he keeps from Luke, but the fact that he's always there, sort of like a guardian angel. A lot of this trailer, quite clearly, you see a lot of water in one sequence. You're on a world called Dayu, which is, it's kind of got that Coruscant sort of neon vibe about it, which looks very, very cool. So clearly Ben gets out and about, and there's a galactic adventure to be had in this episode. I don't know what we're going to expect in terms of story. You said we see a lot of the players. Clearly we see quite a lot of the players. We can always expect surprises because certainly we got them in Mandalorian. We definitely got them in Boba Fett. There's not really going to be much overlap between those storylines because they're separated by about 15 years, but certain characters could come in. what tonally, just gut feeling from that trailer, are you expecting something uplifting? Like Phantom Menace had some sort of uplifting moments as with the young Annie. Attack of the Clones, 20th anniversary this year, very much like that mystery sort of element, which I really dig. Sith was just a big fall, so you know it's probably not going to be that dark. But what tonally do you think we might get?
Well, I mean, I think even Ewan kind of said, didn't he, in the Entertainment Weekly, you know, where we pick up with Obi-Wan, it's kind of, you know, he's kind of broken. He's kind of down. You know, he still hasn't come to terms with the fact that everything that he knows and loves for, you know, lack of a Jedi term, it has been destroyed, you know, and we're set, what, 10 years after Revenge of the Sith. Mm. And I think part of it, and I wonder from the couple of shots that we see in the trailer, we actually get to see some day-to-day stuff. You know, we see Obi-Wan on this, what I don't know, looks like transport or something, and you just wonder, you know, is this him having to adopt an everyman kind of persona? And you know, he obviously he's got to eat and he's got to drink and he's got to buy clothes and stuff, so he's got to have credits. Now you kind of would think that if there was any Obi-Wan Kenobi registered bank account, that would have been frozen by the Imperial banking clan or something back when you know, the Empire was formed. So he's going to have to get a job. So you wonder if, you know, we're going to see that kind of, you know, him in his day-to-day kind of like life just doing something really menial. I don't know, you know, even kind of like, you know, prospecting for scrap or something like Ray did or something to kind of give it a bit of a mirror kind of Ring Theory kind of image, you know, something like that. Has he made contact with Qui-Gon, or is he frustrated that he hasn't been able to make contact with Qui-Gon? Has he been able to commune with Yoda, or has Yoda closed himself off as well? And then also you wonder why or how the Inquisitors end up on Tatooine, because they face off with Onkel Owen. So you think, well, is that something that Kenobi's done, and therefore does Kenobi now have to leave Tatooine just so he can basically make a big kind of distraction on another planet to draw them away from Tatooine? I think we're going to see a transformation, or at least a development of the Obi-Wan story and the character story, like a character arc. Whether or not we see a full arc for him basically coming to terms and maybe acceptance over what's happened at the Clone Wars or not, I don't know. But hopefully we're going to start to see enough that means that if there isn't another Kenobi series, and hopefully there will be, but if there isn't, then when we see him again in A New Hope, everything kind of like falls into place that little bit more.
I mean, I think that Kathy Kennedy in one of the Entertainment Weekly pieces didn't say they're doing the second one, but certainly said that they've discussed it. And I think what you say is quite right, because, you know, you leave him in Sith, he's still, I mean, everything's gone down the toilet, clearly. Yoda's gone to Dagobah, Bail's gone to Alderaan, Ben's gone to Tatooine to look after Luke or watch over Luke. Hands him over to Ben, to Owen and Beru, and off into the desert on his EOP he goes. And we see that EOP again, well, presumably the same creature, in one of the photographs, which is great. It must fart. If it doesn't fart, I'll be really disappointed. But Ben has got a situation whereby, you know, Yoda says that there's been contact with Qui-Gon. Like you've just said, maybe that's something that hasn't come to Ben. And even saying Ben makes me feel like we're getting closer to A New Hope, because you do call him Ben Kenobi when you're talking about A New Hope.
Yeah.
And all the other time you refer to him as Obi-Wan. And I like what you say about creating a persona, because seeing him on that speeder, that sort of ferry bus type thing, traveling from, you know, homeship to homeship or wherever it was, homestead to homestead, does feel a bit like, you know, and you see him in a market. We don't know what town he's in. You kind of, your head kind of says Mos Eisley, but it doesn't need to be. It can be anywhere. It's a big planet. But, you know, him, you know, getting supplies or getting food, like you say, he's got to eat. It's a bit like Luke on Acto, you know, going out and spearing the fish and all that, and, you know, going to the Thalass Islands to get the milk. It's like kind of almost mundane. I mean, that's kind of weirdly fantastical. Not mundane like Luke sitting down drinking blue milk at the homestead, but nevertheless, they've got to eat, haven't they? And to take Ben from Revenge of the Sith, when he was still, even after everything that happened, you got a sense that he was... And I mean, that was like so tragic. Still had a sense of optimism of, we're the Jedi, we're gonna bounce back from this. Like you said, we're a decade later now, and the Empire has proliferated and built and got bigger and scarier so quick. And we're still a few years before, well, obviously we're a decade before Rogue One and the Death Star plans and such, but who would know that the Death Star was being built? You imagine it's being built in complete secrecy, but nevertheless, maybe there's whispers of that. who knows? You kind of sense, you know, like in Jedi, it's like way out in Endor and it's being built, and they're being built concurrently. So one's being built over Endor, the big bugger. And then, you know, the Death Star we know from A New Hope's also being constructed as well in different places. So who knows about that? But yeah, you're right. You know, you can see Ben being deflated and really down about, we've not bounced back. This penance. You said in an episode the other week about, you know, Ben going to Tatooine was like a penance. This penance is just going on and on and on. And having lived the life that Kenobi had lived before, to be cast away in the desert just watching this kid, you know, he knows the mission, but nevertheless, he's still a man. You know, he's got to get through it. So it'll be interesting to see how he goes from that hopeful Kenobi at the end of Sith. I say hopeful, it's a relative term, but, you know, where he was up and on his toes and ready to go, to where we see him in Kenobi, to, like you say, to where he ends up. Bit more Zen Ben. You know, he's a bit more chilled out, isn't he, the Alec Guinness Ben?
Yeah.
He's not quite so, you know, he's a bit more, he knows the way of the world, and he's come to terms with everything that's happened. You sense that he has. This series, like you say, will really be the keystone to all of that, won't it?
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, because even just down to what he says at the very top of that trailer about, like, you know, we lost, basically, for question, obviously, is I wonder who he's talking to. I mean, I don't necessarily think he may be talking to Qui-Gon. Mm. He may be talking to like an early rebel sympathiser on Dayu, something like that.
Or maybe Yoda. Could be talking to Yoda. Or Bail.
Yeah, exactly. It could be any of, you know, somebody who, you know, but the fact is that he sounds defeated.
I'm Anthony Daniels, and you are listening to Fanthatrax. Well done.
You know, we've seen the Inquisitors in this, and actually I think it was quite a big surprise. Actually, we saw, you know, not just one Inquisitor, but we saw quite a few of them, didn't we? You know, it looks like it's from IMDb, it's for the Grand Inquisitor, which is meant to be being played by Rupert Friend. And I think, is it the fifth brother? I think, I don't know, not particularly up with the Inquisitor's names and stuff, and maybe the third sister, I don't know. But, you know, there's definitely a few there, and obviously Moses Ingram's character, Reva, you know, who seems to be the main focus, and what the Entertainment Weekly article says is basically it makes it sound like, you know, this is almost a personal kind of mission or vendetta for her than just kind of like, you know, following orders. But also I think it's quite interesting just to see how the Inquisitors will be used on the populace turn and start swaying people's opinion of actually the Jedi weren't good, they were bad, and, you know, they were ones who kind of like caused all this problems and stuff like that. And I think we kind of almost get that vibe a little bit from this trailer as well. You know, you kind of think that maybe when they land, you know, looking for Jedi, they make the Jedi out to be the bad guys, and they're actually there to serve justice for the galaxy.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see the Inquisitors, because obviously Rebels was the big introduction to them, and they have sort of bled out into other elements of storytelling, but certainly in this era. And it does kind of take me back to Force Unleashed, the whole Starkiller thing. These not necessarily agents of Vader or agents of the Emperor, because they are, everyone's an agent of the Emperor if you think about it in that sense. But, you know, they are working for the Empire. They've got lightsabers. You know, there's all these elements. There's iconography is a big thing in the Star Wars galaxy. And you see these people flying around with lightsabers, and people might just think Jedi, because to me, I don't think 99.9% of the galaxy wouldn't know that the Emperor was a Sith Lord.
No, I don't think so.
You know, and most of the people in the galaxy wouldn't be aware, particularly of Darth Vader. Darth Vader's like a high up military general that anybody in the military or in the forces or in these conflicts and combat zones would be aware of him, but the regular population wouldn't. So I think most people, if they see a lightsaber, inherently, because we've said this before, the Star Wars galaxy, people in the Star Wars galaxy must have collective amnesia, because it's like the Jedi has been completely forgotten about in like a decade. That's the feel of it. But you say a really good point of the propaganda around that to just undermine and crumble the foundations of what the Jedi stood for has clearly been mega successful, which probably plays into Kenobi's, not depression, but, you know, he's disconsolate and he's down about it, and that we lost. You know, you hear it in his voice, we're screwed. And I'd love to know who he's speaking to. But seeing the Grand Inquisitor, like you say, there's been a few comments online about the look of the character. You watched it with the captions on, it says Grand Inquisitor. Yeah. They never gave the Grand Inquisitor a specific title. And he is from Utapau, So generally, most of the characters on Utapau, very tall, long face. There's the, you know, the lines on the face, quite a distinct look. But the Grand Inquisitor, in the cartoon at least, had very strong yellow eyes. I just wonder whether that teaser is fully completed or whether there's a bit of work to be done to complete the look of the character. Certainly that's not outside of their powers. What do you think?
I don't know if whether or not they would show some, you know, an incomplete character like that. I think it's fair to say that the only complaint, that's a bit strong, but the only grumble that I think people have had has been the look of the Grand Inquisitor, which, to be fair, if that is the only issue that we have with this whole series when it comes to the end of it, I think they've done amazingly. But I don't think they would release something that would be dramatically altered too much, I don't think. But you are right, even in the Stars.com article, they label the Grand Inquisitor at, you know, being played by Rupert Friend. So that is him. If the Grand Inquisitor was only seen in Rebels and we had no other Powan as reference like we do in Revenge of Sith, then I could understand it, because, you know, because to be fair, both Rebels and the Clone Wars are highly stylized. But the fact is, actually, we do have we have several Powans that we could use as references. So it is a bit odd, unless, of course, you know, they've not wanted to maybe mask Rupert Friend's face so much so that people kind of maybe know who he is. I don't know. It is a bit odd, but it doesn't by any stretch of imagination bother me whatsoever. I just, you know, I saw it. I knew who he was based on the lightsaber and the context of the trailer. So I wasn't kind of like left scratching my head kind of going, is that the Grand Inquisitor? It's like, no, that is who it is. So, you know, if that's it, that's fine. I don't really have a massive issue really with it, to be honest. So
no, I'm just curious, Rupert Friend was in Hitman 47, which was weird that Timothy the Oliphant was in the previous Hitman film and he's just turned up in Mando and Book of Boba Fett. So you've got the two Hitmen, and if you see Rupert Friend in that shaved head, he has got one of the roundest heads I've ever seen. It really does look like a matchstick. So the top of a matchstick. So that's all good and well. And I just think the Grand Inquisitor is a title. And if it's literally specifically the same Grand Inquisitor from Rebels, that's great, because that's all the synergy that we really want. And this is about 5 years before Rebels. I think Rebels is a few years before A New Hope. There's a bit of a gap. So there's the potential for that title to be taken by another character.
Absolutely.
And I don't know. I'm spitballing now. I don't know, because if it is, they confirm it's the same character, then it's the same character. But in terms of the aesthetics of the character, certainly he doesn't look like an Utapau character. But by the same token, you know, you and me don't look that similar, do we? You know what I mean? There's this, you know, this, just because it's one same species, we always look at these characters and think, well, all
the same. Yeah.
All at the same, and that's not the case. It's not the case in the real world, so why would it be the case in Star Wars? But yeah, that would be interesting to see how that plays out. I just wonder if they ever considered Jason Isaac for that role.
Yeah.
I don't know, because he voiced him, you know?
I mean, that's the thing, and to be fair, Jason Isaacs, he makes an imposing presence on, you know, in the Harry Potter films and also even in Star Trek Discovery. So I don't necessarily think, you know, it would have been too far beyond. I mean, it is, you know, but who knows? I mean, until we kind of see the series, it's hard to understand maybe why they, you know, they've cast him and that. But I'm pretty sure, and I did try to go back on my notes for speculation stuff, which clearly I haven't updated or haven't kept exhaustive notes on. But I'm pretty sure, I think we both kind of thought that Indira Varma would probably play an Imperial officer, and it looks like we have been
vindicated
in that trailer, which is good. So, you know, she looks to be playing an Imperial officer called Tia. I think maybe one of the complaints that some people had with the Book of Boba Fett was, you know, they had all these kind of fairly famous actors, but then the characters that they were portraying were pretty much glorified cameos to some extent. So I'm hoping that we'll see, you know, some decent screen time with Indira, but also not only Indira, but, you know, Joel Edgerton and Bonnie Peace, because I think, you know, the images that we've seen of Owen Lars in the Entertainment Weekly article, especially, just they do look like, actually, maybe we could see something that, you know, a side of Owen that we've not seen before, and hopefully, you know, something that will just be a completely different appreciation for the character.
That's true, because there was always a perception of Ben and Owen, I mean, initially they were brothers, and then the rewrites turn that into that not being the case. And Attack of the Clones really did sort of solidify the relationships, like it did with a lot of things, you know, the Jango and Barbara and all the other elements that Clones did so well. But Ben and Owen, you always assume, have quite a fractious relationship. I mean, a lot of that comes from what Owen says in A New Hope, and he's saying it all for the benefit of Luke. So maybe that's not specifically the case, because, you know, certain point of view and all that, you know, classic Kenobi line. But nevertheless, like you say, you see a lot of him in this trailer. It looks like he's involved. It'd be very interesting to see what that dynamic is. And also, obviously, Beru comes into the mix. So I wonder how that's going to play out.
I know I said it on last week's episode of Good Morning Tatooine, and I know people said it as a jest, but I'm definitely chucking some credits in the Obi-Wan Kenobi, Beru, Owen Lars kind of love triangle. That's my... That's my speculation. I'm going to write that one down for that. But at the same time, you kind of think that, I don't know, let's say, for instance, there's some kind of incident in Mos Eisley or something, and Obi-Wan Kenobi's the centre of it, and he's forced to use his Jedi powers or something, and that brings Inquisitors, and Owen's, you know, I don't think Owen's, like, daft, and I don't think he's, you know, he's naive. He could quite easily, you know, point the finger at Obi-Wan Kenobi and kind of say, look, you brought them to Tatooine, you know, and they've now put in the life of the child that you gave to us to, you know, protect at risk. So do something about it, you know, fix it, basically. That could be the impetus to maybe, like I said, moving Obi-Wan off planet. Unless, of course, Obi-Wan is off planet in some kind of flashback or something. I don't know. I mean...
Or a mission. I mean, like I say, you always get the feeling that he's kept... it's the gut feeling, we don't know, but the feeling was that he kept in contact, of all the people he kept in contact with, Bail Organa.
Yeah.
Because we talk about fulcrums in Rebels and fulcrums, you know, Andor's a fulcrum and all these different fulcrum characters like Ahsoka. And you think, well, if ever there's going to be a fulcrum character that would make all the sense in the world, it would be Ben to come in at the last minute as a rescue character. But, of course, he's got this vital mission. For Bail, it's easy. They're raising Leia as their daughter. Nobody would think anything of it. You know, she's been there since she was days old, probably hours old. So that's you know, no one's going to question that, really, are they? Those two senior characters on Alderaan. But with Luke, it's a slightly different family dynamic. Yeah. Ben needs to stay there. And it's just interesting that Yoda in Revenge of the Sith would say, and why was this the way? Other than just the fact that Bail says, well, we've always wanted a daughter. You know, if they'd have said, we always wanted a son, did Yoda know which of the two, Leia and Luke, because of seeing things in the Force? This is kind of a different question, but, you know, seeing things in the Force. Did he know that Luke would be the one that would kind of blossom into the Force before Leia came into the Force? Because Leia had that saber and laid it down and Rey picked it up, you know, in the long view. How much did Yoda know of that? Did he know Luke would be the one that would sort of... I mean, Yoda gets into Luke a lot in Empire, doesn't he?
Yeah.
You know, always with you, it cannot be done. You know, sitting there looking at the horizon, dreaming of whatever and never doing anything. You know, so Yoda knows that they're very different personalities, but it was Ben that was sent to look after Luke. I just wonder if there's anything in that.
Do you know what? I've never thought about that. Like, you know, the decision to, you know, who goes where and splits them up. How, you know, that's a really interesting point that I've never thought about. I don't know how public knowledge that is. I don't know if it's something I skipped over in one of the books or something like that. And similarly, if it's public knowledge that, you know, Owen and Beru adopted.
But with Luke, I think it's a bit more like in Superman when the Kents find Clark when he's crashed the ship and they live in a farm in Smallville in the middle of nowhere. So they just go, oh, well, yeah, she was pregnant when she didn't know she was pregnant. And this is our baby, Clark, you know. And that's almost an easy one because, you know, the Kents and the Lars family are all way out in the sticks and who's going to know? But, like you say, with Breya and Bail being prominent members of Alderaan society and a senator in the Galactic Republic and all that malarkey, or the Galactic Senate as it would be now, you know, these are prominent characters and Bail has to stay prominent.
Exactly, yeah.
In that political eye, you know, spotlight. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that plays out.
Hi, this is Guy Henry and you're listening to Fantha Tracks. Enjoy.
Beyond the trailer, they also released an image of Darth Vader. A very, very cool looking picture of him coming out of his meditation chamber. What did you make of that?
As images go, I mean, I talk about when I do the Rebel Legion costuming panels, and I did one at LFCC not a couple of weeks ago. I talk about silhouettes. And as silhouettes go, the Darth Vader silhouette is probably the most recognisable silhouette I think you can ever show or ever shoot on film.
Yeah.
And that, the way that image is composed, that is definitely one for the One Perfect Shot Twitter feed. Agreed. I mean, it's just amazing. I kind of hope, actually, but if, you know, if there is another trailer, I hope actually they don't put Vader or Anakin in it. I hope that like we don't see Vader until he's actually in the show. Even if it's kind of like, you know, Rogue One levels of like participation, a bit like how he was in like the, you know, the first season of Rebels, where basically he's only really kind of instructing the Inquisitors via like holo feeds and stuff like that. That's fine, but just seeing Vader like this suggests that we're gonna see, or he's gonna have scenes with people. So I think it's a striking image. So yeah,
totally agree with you. It's a very powerful image. It really is. It looks like it's come straight out of the films, so can't praise that enough. I hope they don't overuse him. And you make a great mention of Rebels, because when they first released the very first episode of Sparkle Rebellion, and there wasn't a Vader scene in it, as I remember, I'm sort of casting my mind back 7 or 8 years. Lucas made some suggestion of, you need Vader in this scene, and they get James Earl Jones into the voice, you know, and do that sequence. I don't know if he's doing the voice for this. We've got Reese Beecher now. Of course, you spoke to them a few months ago.
That's interesting.
So there's the potential, you know, there's the potential that they do something there. But James Earl Jones is still around. He's 91. He's just had a theatre named after him. So, like John Williams, use him if he's here. I mean, Hayden Christensen's in it, you know, and you're thinking he's in the armour like he was at the end of Revenge of the Sith. So, yeah, judicious with Vader, like in Rogue One. You didn't see an awful lot of Vader. You saw that corridor scene that everyone loves so much, but not that much more. The Krennic scene, a few other brief moments. It was enough. You know, if you use him judiciously, there's way more power in the menace than there is in seeing him all the time chopping people down, because you kind of know Vader kills because he kind of likes doing it.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of his thing. It doesn't need much of a push to sort of end somebody. So my hope would be, he's in there regularly, but just in spare moments, you know. I'm all for seeing loads of Anakin, though. I'm really hoping that there is a flashback, and seeing that meditation chamber just makes me think, I don't know, but thematically, one of the neat things about Book of Boba Fett was the back to tank, and it gave you a moment to sort of zone in on Boba, and then to take you into a flashback sequence, which is how we learned all the Tusken stuff and all the other bits. And I'm just thinking, what better mechanical process, if you like, what better method to take you into a flashback scene, not just from Ben's point of view, but from Anakin's point of view. Because, you know, Anakin and Darth Vader are kind of two separate people, but that always feels very much like that's almost a physical decision by Vader, that name no longer has any meaning for me. It's my, you know, and, you know, that whole sequence, Luke has the conversation on Endor, and I see true self, no, doesn't want to know it. They're two separate people, essentially. But when he's in that chamber, I always think of that beautiful Joe Caroni piece from 15 years ago, when he's in the chamber with the helmet off and you see the image of Padme above his head. It's a beautiful piece. And maybe those chamber, meditation chamber moments is the only moments, you saw it briefly in Rogue One, but they are the only moments when he can really just be Anakin out of the suit, nobody else interfering with his thoughts. I think there's any weight behind that?
I mean, that's a good shout. It's, a lot of weight. And I think actually, you know, what you've got the option of is, like you said, you've got the option of having flashbacks from both Obi-Wan's perspective via meditation and obviously Anakin's perspective from meditation. You know, the only thing I have to, I guess, say is that, you know, we've just had a very heavy flashback filled series. You know, bearing in mind that up until really Mandalorian, we've had no flashbacks in Star Wars, and suddenly
Last Jedi was the first real one, wasn't
absolutely
it?
Good shout. Yeah, Last Jedi was the first one. So before that, no flashbacks. And I'm absolutely fine with changing, you know, how we shoot Star Wars, you know, but what shots and types, you know, conventions that we use. But I think if we start to kind of rely heavily, like, you know, if we've got another series full of flashbacks as a way to kind of just kind of fill in exposition, I think it almost could start to lean on the slightly lazy side of storytelling, i.e. it worked for Boba Fett, let's do it again for Obi-Wan. There's completely justifiable reasons for doing it, but at the same time, I think from a way of trying to kind of keep the series giving them their own slightly separate identities, this is a way that you probably want to, you know, tread carefully with. But at the same time, I think as much as I'm totally fine with Obi-Wan going off planet for whatever reason, I think as long as it's justified, I think I'd probably find it harder to have Darth Vader touch down on Tatooine.
Oh man, yeah, totally agree with that. Yeah, I think there's wriggle room in what was said in A New Hope.
Yeah,
you know, we meet again at last, the circle is now complete, that whole conversation, because as we said on a recent episode, you know, Vader and Anakin are two different psyches living in that armor, aren't they, essentially? Yeah. So when Vader's talking about this dude in the armor, he's not talking about the little kid on Tatooine. So you can massage the words and still have it make sense and hold weight, because this is still a decade before A New Hope.
Yeah, exactly. And also, there's nowhere in canon, and unless I've missed a scene from A New Hope in particular or the original trilogy, there's no point where basically Obi-Wan says to Luke, I sat on Tatooine for like the last 20 years. I didn't leave this bloody Dust Bowl just to watch you pretend to play pod racer pilot. There's nothing to suggest that. You know, it's kind of, it has been one of those kind of, obviously it's more of a Legends thing, and also our own headcanon suggests that Obi-Wan never left that planet. That was his penance, so therefore he stayed there. But there's nothing to suggest in canon that he has. So there is no reason for them to do that.
So final thoughts on the trailer, gut feeling, one word, where do you sit right now as we talk about it and wait the very short few weeks until this starts?
I am perched on, like, I think the edge of my seat. However much I thought that I was looking forward to Obi-Wan Kenobi, it's nothing compared to how I am feeling now. Now I've seen the trailer, now I've actually seen something. I like this overall aesthetic that we've got in this series from what we've seen in the trailer. I think everything kind of works. There's a distinctive look about it. And I think this is just going to be a real roller coaster of, I think, emotions for actually a lot of people. Actually, I think this will bring back a lot of nostalgia for a series that a lot of us still think only happened 5 years ago, but when in actual fact it's like over 20. Yeah. So I think this is going to be probably the highlight of 2022.
Wouldn't argue with that. You're right. We are 20 years past the halfway point of the prequels, and it still feels relevant, mostly, I would say, because of Clone Wars. We're just beyond that with Bad Batch, which we've got season 2 coming soon. But yeah, I was excited before, and once we saw that photograph of Ewan on the cover of Entertainment Weekly, I was very pleased because he looks the business. And then to get that trailer, and even more, just like you say, just little elements, just seeing a bit more of Tatooine, seeing Dayu, this new planet, briefly, seeing the Inquisitor, seeing Owen, which was very cool. I think there's a lot of interesting story to be told. We've got 6 episodes to come. As I said, Kathleen Kennedy has kind of said, well, you know, maybe there's still a decade, you know, between now and A New Hope. So there's loads of time if they want to do more, and everyone seems up for it. So fingers crossed this one sticks the landing, and we'll be doing this all again in not too many years' time.
For everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
Well, I think we're going to leave it there for this week, and I'm going to let you go on your hollybobs. But actually, before you do, you have one more task to complete, and that is to let people know how they can get in touch with a comment, a question, a thought, or a theory.
It would be my pleasure. If you want to be a part of the action and stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, visit FanthaTracks.com or check out the free
Kenobi!
Thank God for soundproof rooms. FanthaTracks app through the App Store to follow us on your mobile device. You can reach out to us and send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@fanthatracks.com. So get your questions in, Even though I'm away for a few weeks, still send them in. We'll get them all ready for future episodes. There might be episodes without me whilst I'm on my holiday. I'm looking forward to listening to an episode that's not got my voice in it. Comment, like, and share on any of our social media feeds at FanthaTracks, and be sure to subscribe, leave a review, preferably a 5-star one, on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. Thanks to James Semple for composing the FanthaTracks intro, Adam O'Brien for our Making Tracks opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. Remember, tune in to Good Morning Tatooine. It was back last week. Go back and listen to it and have a watch. It was very, very good. Live Sunday evenings, 9 o'clock UK time, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, on Facebook and YouTube. And check out FanthaTracks Radio on Fridays at 7 o'clock UK time for brand new episodes of Fantha from Down Under, Planet Layer, Desert Planet Discs, Start Your Engines, and Cannon Fodder. And that's me done for about, oh, I don't know, 3 weeks or something. So,
epic.
Have fun. I'm giving you the keys, the metaphorical keys to the car, so don't scratch her.
There you go. I actually got the keys right there.
Have you got them?
Yeah. I got them cut the last time you came round. Dude, have a lovely time. And of course, you know, I'm envious of the fact that you get spend like a week in that Galactic Star Cruiser. No expenses paid because, you know, Disney's covered it all. So you lucky get. But have fun. Yeah. And of course, that has not happened. So what's your plans? You're going flying to Florida and...
doing the whole Disney thing and eating way too much junk food and just getting a bit of sun.
Nice.
The solar power.
Yeah.
And then come back re-energized for the summer season of conventions. So it's hit the ground running when as soon as I get back. It's Echo Base and Wales Comic Con the weekend to get back. But yeah, Galaxy's Edge, hopefully, and see all that good stuff. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to
Brilliant,
it.
Brilliant, awesome. Give Kylo Ren a slap for me.
I will.
And to everybody else, thank you very much for listening. Stay safe, take care. And, of course, you can catch us at the next episode. And until then, may the Force be with you.